know my heart in my kitene hotaka. Welcome to the panel on RNZ National. Nice to be with you on Friday. Israeli missiles have hit a site in Iran, that in just a moment. And the fact that we don't have stalking laws is an embarrassment. Our guest has strong words for the government this hour. And our question of the day today is this: what is the album on very first listen that just blew you away? Not a slow burn, but boom, it knocked you off your feet. OK Computer by Radiohead melted my mind when it came out. Out of this world amazing, says the listener. So keep those coming. 2101 is the text. You can email the panel at rnz.co.nz. With me this Friday, Sally Wenley, freelance journalist. Sally, welcome.
Welcome to me. Thank you, Wallace.
Good to have you here, Sally. With us, Michael Moynihan, also Managing Director of ICTEC. Kia ora, Michael.
Kia ora, Wallace. How are you?
Nice to have you both here. And to this, Israel has carried out an attack on Iran, US officials say, after blasts reported near Isfahan, Iran. The Guardian reports the explosions appear to have been at the Shahid Salami airbase in the Iranian city of Isfahan, city of 1.9 million. Flights have resumed at the two major airports in Iran's capital. Oil and gold prices have jumped while shares slide. With us, Robert Patman, Professor of Politics and Director of International Studies at the University of Otago. Professor Patman, welcome. This is a developing story. How do you react to these latest developments?
Good evening, Wallace. It's sobering developments because these attacks by the Netanyahu government apparently initiated missile strikes, although we're still gathering information about them, against Iran, was clearly in defiance of the wishes of the Biden administration, the major backer of the Netanyahu government. And I think now the world is beginning to hold its breath as the Netanyahu government delivers on its pledge to respond to Iran's retaliatory strikes of missiles and drones a week or so, or just a few days back on the 14th of April. So, we are, you know, this is a very worrying situation because the Iranians have already said they will respond to any Israel assault or missile strike. And the spectre of tit for tat, spiraling tit for tat violence, I think, is now coming before us.
Well, Iran officials, they have denied reports of a missile attack. Robert, shall we get a brief comment from our panel, see what they have to say about this, Sally?
Robert, I'm quite ignorant about a lot of this, but I think the big country that is intriguing me is the States. What sort of role does it have in this? And what advice do you think that the US should intervene?
Well, I think the Biden administration must be privately frustrated or even furious because having urged the Netanyahu government to accept the win, as they put it, last week following the Iranian drone and missile attack, it should be recalled that the Iranians launched about 300 missiles and drones at Israel, but 99% of them were intercepted, not only due to Israel's impressive Iron Dome anti-missile system, but also because of the efforts of Israel's allies, including the United States and the UK. So I think, I think from the American point of view, the last thing the Biden administration wants is a wider regional war and a steep hike in oil prices in what is an American presidential year.
Oh, yes, so, that's right.
I think that the Biden administration has got itself... this is a major challenge. They laid down the red line, and although the Israelis warned them they were going to retaliate, the Biden administration have said that they disapprove. They did not approve this strike. And so, I think America has the leverage if it chooses to use it. It's been, so far, the Biden administration has been disinclined to use that leverage.
Brief comment, Michael.
Well, I was just wondering, I always wonder what is driving Israel in this. I mean, what's the upside for them? And why would they antagonize the Americans if that's potentially what they've done, let alone let themselves open for what might happen beyond us? What's in Netanyahu's brain? What's going on there?
That's a difficult question to answer. I think, firstly, a reasonable assumption you made that the Netanyahu government may be running the risk of antagonizing the United States. I think it may antagonize the Biden administration. Whether it antagonized Mr. Biden's opponents, the Republicans, is another matter. I think Netanyahu, who has defied American advice on, you know, not only in Gaza, but in also his dealings with Iran so far, to some degree, it may think that it can play the United States. You know, people have used the analogy of the tails wagging the dog, and the dog seems to put up with it. So this is a real challenge for the United States, because its authority as a global superpower is being brought into question.
Professor Papin, nice to have you here on that update. Kia ora. Appreciate your time this evening. That's Robert Papin from Otago University. 14 past six. Now, put the year on ice, everybody. The economy is not expected to improve until mid-2025. According to Infometrics, who have published a new set of forecasts this morning. Households and businesses are being advised to keep a close eye on costs under the middle of next year, when economic conditions are expected to improve. With us, Gareth Keenan, Infometrics Chief Forecaster. Kia ora, Gareth.
Evening, Wallace.
So many driving home listen to this going, OK, so all we need to do is survive till 25, is that right?
It kind of feels like that at the moment, yeah. And it's not the sort of news you want driving home on a Friday afternoon, I guess. But, look, for us, looking at how the economy has evolved over the last few months, I mean, late 2023, we were looking at things. We could see the effect of interest rates coming through and affecting household spending in particular. But all things considered, we were looking and going, you know, this economy is showing resilience. It's holding together. But over the last few months, there's been increasing stress for households in terms of those, you know, continued high interest rates, no real sort of relief in sight there for some time, and more stress coming through in the housing market as a result of that. As well, of course, plenty of headlines with job losses over the last few weeks as well. It's not the GFC, let's be clear about that.
Right.
And we're not expecting it to be that bad, but it is still another year of pretty tough times.
It's a good reminder, actually, you know, going through the global financial crisis, Sally, I think, 40,000 jobs lost in the first 3 months, nothing near that. Nonetheless, you know, it's every day is some pretty sobering news around the economy, isn't there?
Certainly
just in terms
is.
Of job cuts and household pressures.
Yeah, and speaking of household pressures, thinking of the huge, increase in the price of groceries and basic commodities, and electricity prices are going up, water rates are potentially going up, and council rates are going up. What's going to happen? How are people going to manage, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And look, over the last couple of years, I think we've seen, as those mortgage rates have risen, households have adapted where they can. You know, is it about getting a boarder into that spare room? I think now, with sort of pressure coming on the labour market as well, I mean, that restricts people's options a bit, because there's probably not as much overtime going or other shifts available. Everybody's looking for, you know, the extra few hours that'll just help ease some of the pressures around the budgets that people are facing. So it is very difficult times. It's a matter of, you know, cutting your cloth, watching your costs to make sure that you're trying to keep them under control. But you're right. I mean, the Reserve Bank itself is still worried about what local government rates are doing, what insurance is doing. I mean, I got my own house insurance update this week and it was 30% higher than last year. Now, I can cope with that, but I bet there's a lot of people who can't, you know. So real issues still coming through for people. It may not be so much on the food side of things, thank goodness, this year, but there are still some pressures out there.
30% higher, Michael.
That it doesn't surprise me. I mean, in business, we're seeing some enormous hikes, particularly around insurances.
Oh, yeah.
The interesting thing for me is it just reminds us all of the sort of circular nature of this sort of economy, because actually, ultimately, if we're talking about families who no longer have any discretion in their incomes whatsoever, then how much does that require the, you know, the tax, the government intervention around supplements and other things in order to help boost, you know, kind of general way, general incomes in households. How much does that have an impact when there are bankruptcies or defaults on, you know, it's not as if any of these things play out by themselves or in isolation.
Sure.
And each of it has a sort of step that triggers another step that triggers another step. And I guess I think, no, you're right, it may not be a GFC, but there's a lot of sort of gathering momentum that sort of feels like, well, where did we top, where did the dominoes start to topple? And does it really, you know, do we, what the end point doesn't feel as if it's going to land very smoothly.
Hey, Gareth, I do want to know, I mean, so the annual inflation back to below 3%, any timeline, time frame?
It'll either be probably the final quarter of this year or the first quarter of 2025. I mean, this week's inflation numbers were in line with market expectations, but there were still concerns there that the, while the international price pressures have eased back and continue to do so, those domestic price pressures, which is the stuff the Reserve Bank can influence, those are still running at 5.8% over the last year and being quite stubborn, to be perfectly honest. So, you know, that sort of domestic pressure is you're feeding through into our expectation that it's late this year or early next year before headline inflation gets, I guess, what you could call under control and before the Reserve Bank has scope to cut rates.
Sorry.
Gareth, getting back to basics, how do you know this? Do you have this big crystal ball? How do you know what is going to happen and when it's going to happen?
Yeah, look, I mean, part of it is 25 years of experience in forecasting the economy, so I've been through one or two cycles. That helps. Look, as an economist, we have our models, which are predicated on historical relationships and how things have worked in the past. The issue is, of course, that no two cycles are exactly the same. So there is an element of judgment around it. We're kind of pouring over the tea leaves, as it were.
And say
the
tarot cards, maybe.
All the time as well. Yeah, something like that. So, I mean, look, there is always judgment, and there's always a chance that we're wrong as well.
The interesting thing is that even if inflation stops, the prices that we've already absorbed won't go away. So, you know, there's another level in the economy that gets reached, and they're not going to suddenly put the price down of the of a whole lot of things which has gone up in the last few years. So to a certain extent, it's got to be, we've got to drive it out of better productivity. We've got to drive it out of, you know, higher wages. We've got to do all of those things if we're going to actually sort of change the fundamentals that sit inside of it. Otherwise, you know, actually the reality is that the insurance companies are unlikely to put the prices down, having put them up by 35%.
Yeah. Oh, well, we'll watch the space, Gareth, and we'll look for the next set of forecasts and see if, as Sally intimates, you're right or not.
Yeah.
Nice one. That's Gareth Keenan there, Infometrics Chief Forecast. 21 past six, the panel, RNZ National. Hey, loving your feedback regarding that question of the day, which is, what is the album on very first listen just blew you away? We're talking about this because, of course, it is a huge day for Taylor Swift fans, as well as the listening party started at 4 p.m. So we go live to a listening party later on in the show. Lauren says the best album first time listen, Oxygen by Jean-Michel Jarre. It was mind-blowing. And to this, it was big news across the day and yesterday, of course. A litany of police failures have been found in the handling of Fazana Yacoubi's complaints. 8 weeks after her first complaint of stalking, she was murdered by the man stalking her. Police have met with Ms. Yacoubi's family to apologise for their failings, and there are calls for New Zealand to have a criminal stalking law. Our next guest says the fact that we don't, it's embarrassing. Chief Executive Officer of Women's Refuge, Dr. Ange Jury, is with us. Kia ora, Dr. Jury.
Yeah, kia ora, Wallace. How are you?
Very well. It's just shocking, the story, isn't it? And reading through it and recalling when it happened and just seeing that time, that really what struck many is the timeline of her continuously going to police.
Yeah, and remember that this had been going on for quite some considerable time before she decided to try the police. So, you know, it's not just an 8-month sort of series. This had been going on for a long time, but yeah, she was let down in a big way.
Why don't you think that stalking is taken more seriously here?
People don't understand it, Wallace. You know, people don't understand how things that can seem perfectly innocuous, I guess, to you or I, are actually terrifying in a demonstration of someone's power and control over you. You know, finding a bunch of flowers on your back doorstep, are you going to report that to police? No, probably not. But that's a demonstration that this person knows who you are and where you are. Terrifying stuff.
Yeah. Sally.
Dr. Drury, speaking of the police, do you feel that they're given enough education about how this can escalate? And should it be just a policy that they're aware of and adhere to? Or does there need to be actual legislation to formalise it a bit more?
Oh, we need legislation. It's very, very hard for police to act in a criminal sense. Well, they could, but it's more difficult if they don't have the legislation. Now, we're one of the few jurisdictions that we like to compare ourselves with who don't have specific stalking legislation. Australia does, the UK does.
Why do you think that is? Why would New Zealand have left that off the statute books?
That's a really good question. And we were very encouraged by the previous government who apparently were doing work on this. We had assurances from most of the major parties in Parliament that this was going to be something that they would get dealt with after the election. And sort of a bit disappointed to see Paul Goldsmith saying that it's something that will be dealt with in due course. Well, do we need another Fazana before it gets dealt with?
Mm. Sally.
And thinking about this particular horrific case, in your role, I mean, is this something that you see again and again and again?
Stalking is something that happens so much more than people think. Did a piece of research a wee while ago using our risk assessment data, and the majority of the records that we looked at had identified stalking and what they were experiencing. It's not an uncommon thing.
And I imagine it's sometimes hard to distinguish which is somebody who, be it a male or a female, want to flatter a potential partner and just show that they are in awe of them as opposed to these horrific crimes.
But doesn't the line have to be? I mean, quite often with these sorts of things you think, well, why didn't the person go to the police more often? Or why didn't they talk to friends and family? This woman did everything that she should have done to draw attention to it. She did everything that she possibly could to make people understand it was serious. So the line I would have thought that needs to be drawn is when the person being stalked is feeling unsafe and is feeling as if, so it doesn't, you know, you don't really have to go to the motives of the stalker. You need to be able to listen to the stalkee. And in the moment they say, no, this doesn't feel like the right thing, somebody has to be able to respond to that and keep them safe, I would have thought.
Oh, you're precisely right. I don't disagree with anything you're saying there, but they also need to know that when they go to police, that they are going to be treated seriously. I mean, it was a no-brainer in this instance.
Yeah, you would have thought so.
You know, having someone threaten to throw acid in your face, pretty full-on.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be mistaken for some bit of random love bombing, you know?
As I say, it was pretty shocking reading, you know, through that timeline and seeing just that that absence of attention to the fact that this needed, you know, immediate attention. I'm just picking up on what Sally was saying as well. In terms of better education for everybody, perhaps coming out of schools or universities or whatever, on what stalking might constitute. For example, you mentioned that illustration of putting flowers on the back door. Do you think that we need to perhaps have a component of education here of what constitutes unwanted behaviour?
Well, I think we already have that, Wallace. I mean, it's not like it's unknown or mysterious. Yeah. You know, we do actually have it. I think what we need to do is have the legislation that demonstrates that actually it is criminal behaviour.
Got it.
Yeah, you know, it's not just a some, like I said, misguided love bombing stuff, that this is actually an offence. Stop doing it.
So it's great that we're talking about this. It's getting a lot of attention, but you said that this current government is not really doing anything. What would be your advice to the government about what needs to happen and how? How can this legislation get underway?
Jenny Anderson's got a private members bill that's not sure if it's been pulled out of the biscuit tin or not, but I know that there is a bill, and I would urge that they all support it and get it done.
Are there bits of the current statutes, though, that could apply? Couldn't there be some things about menacing or, you know, wouldn't there be ways of applying some of the laws that already exist to try and, whilst waiting for something that's specific around stalking, couldn't they be applying some other legislation as well?
Possibly, but it's very difficult to do. Like it fits in under the harassment, harassment laws, and those are treated more as civil issues rather than criminal issues. Look, it is something that could be got through Parliament fast if we had majority support across the House.
Dr. Jury, kia ora, very nice to have you here on this matter.
Thank
I really appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you, Wallace. Thank
this
you.
The CEO of Women's Refuge, Dr. Ange Jury, on that story. It is 6:30. You are on the panel Friday evening with Sally Winley and Michael Moynihan.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.